Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And this is a jam-packed episode, everyone. There is
I love jam.
I like peanut butter myself. There's a lot going on because we had all these TV shows premiere. New York Comic Con just happened. I mean, we got a lot to talk about.
Just don't put it all in one jar, Dave.
No. Oh. Well, you know, they're doing that now, right?
Peanut butter, and they just took it. It doesn't work. Bunch of goobers. Anyway.
I think mine is a jelly instead.
I think one of my favorite comedians I saw, he was talking about how lazy people have gotten, and he's like, I've seen peanut butter and jelly now in one jar. How do you have to be? He's like, now they're going to add croutons, and you're just going to get a spoon and go, I'm having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
You say that, but someone will. Just have columns of...
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, I just got back from the convention, and boy, are my arms tired. No.
That made no sense.
Not even a little bit.
Actually, I just got back to the convention and boy, are my feet tired. Oh, man, 4 days of being on your feet is not fun.
And New York City is a long way to run from.
I know, exactly. You know, that no one will let me on the train anymore, so I have to walk.
Yeah, well, good thing I got you that donut on a stick.
Oh, God.
Help as a motivator to get you back to Philly.
Oh, I am so glad you're on this one today. It's just awesome.
Yes, if anything, Ben can put me in my place. So yeah. Anyway,
so you're New York Comic Con.
Yes.
Talk about it. Tell
anything
us.
Exciting happened there?
And don't tell us about the things you missed because that just ticks me off.
Actually, one of the things I want to talk about, it just came out today, which I thought was interesting, is Jared Leto was there.
Jared Leto came out today?
He came out, yes. No. it was in the news. He was there on Sunday walking around in costume. So no one knew he was there. He crashed the convention. Like, he wasn't on any panels or anything. He just snuck in. Wore a costume, and what he was doing is taking pictures of cosplayers and posting it up chat. Mm. And
so he was doing Screen Junkies jobs.
Yes. but the interesting thing is when he picked this one Batman cosplayer, he put on there, my enemy, my friend, when he posted the picture, which has sparked even more rumors.
Of course it has.
That
he is... Tim Drake?
Yes, that he's Robin turned into the Joker, which I hope they don't do that.
I hope they don't do that either, but I don't know. I'm just going to let it go.
At this point, I wouldn't put it past them to make Batman turn into the Joker. And then come back from the future to taunt his former self.
Well, they kind of did that. Did anyone here play Arkham Knight besides me?
No.
I'm in Minecraft. I can make Batman in there.
Not quite the same. I don't think Minecraft Arkham Knight is nearly on the same level.
So, yeah, I mean, he has the Joker dies in Arkham City, but yet he's still in Arkham Knight because he's like the voice in your head the whole time you're playing.
Makes sense.
Oh, they kind of did. Bruce Timm did that kind of thing in Return of the Joker for Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
So he's like Bruce's twisted version of Captain Stacy.
Oh. Yes. Yes. No, and it's...
It's amoral compass.
But it's funny, though, because, I mean, that's how I kind of took that saying anyway, is that's the Joker and Batman's relationship. You know, they're a yin and yang.
Yeah.
One can't exist without the other. So, you know, they're friends and enemies. Well, they're enemies.
They're frenemies.
They're frenemies. With there benefits. You go.
You know, I did not need that tonight. It's a good thing I keep a can of mine soap next to my bed so that when I go off.
Well, wasn't that what they set up in the alternate version of Earth, the Flashpoint version? They basically were friends with benefits because they were a married couple.
Oh my God! I did not know that.
What?
That's
in the Flashpoint version. Bruce Wayne was the one who got killed.
Right.
And leaving Thomas Wayne to end up becoming
okay, yes, yes.
And right. Martha was the Joker.
So there you go. I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, okay, yes.
So they're friends.
Because we had a female Joker, yes. and who was also the wife of Batman, so right. They're frenemies with benefits.
Yes.
There's a storyline that, you know, I'm shocked they haven't explored further because it's so popular in cosplay. You'll see a lot of people dressed as that version of Batman. Mm. And it's just like, you know, why not just do a one-off that explores a day in the life of that Batman?
You mean like a what if?
Yes, or an Elseworlds, as they call it in DC world. Yes, that would be cool.
So what else did you see?
Well, he mentioned Flash.
So we saw the cartoon.
Naturally, that transitioned us to talking about...
The Flash.
I was going to say Arrow, but okay.
I was going to say Gotham, but I didn't want to bring everybody down.
Well, the one cool thing that happened is they did show the premiere of a couple shows, and they showed showed the premiere of Flash and Arrow there. Now,
but they already aired.
They had already aired, so I'm not really sure why they showed the premiere episode.
Ta-da!
But
I don't know.
But yeah, that was kind of cool, and they also showed sizzle reels,
yes,
for the Flash, which
I saw those just today. They were very nice.
Yes, they're very cool. They showed Professor Zoom.
No,
I think it's just Zoom.
There is a Professor Zoom, but there is also a Zoom.
For the people listening who aren't actually hep on these things, we should talk about what actually happened in the premiere. And
well, that is true.
So, spoilers. Ha! We said it before we said the spoilers this time.
It's the first time for everything.
We are getting better.
Though I did spoil Arkham Knight a second ago. So, anyway.
Yeah, like that's going to matter.
So in Flash, we came back from the aftermath of the unstable wormhole that was created to find that Barry is the reluctant lone hero. Lone Wolf. He's playing apparently the beginning of this season. You know, pushing everyone away and broody.
But it didn't last very
long. Well, because he's the Flash.
And you know, it's funny because the first they showed was that whole imagine sequence that he had of like the what if world of him fighting Captain Cold and Heat Wave. And, you know, Ronnie Raymond showing up as Firestorm to help finish them off. And in watching that, I was sort of, it bugged me because I was like, you know, Captain Cold was being like over the top, like, I will kill you if it's the last thing I ever do, kind of thing. And I was like, that doesn't seem to fit his character. Like, he's not that, I don't know. Black
comic bookish.
Yeah, he's not that comic bookish. But then when they sort of revealed that was all just going on in Barry's head because he's pining over the losses and things that have changed, it fit more. It made more sense. And I'm glad that was not a legitimate scene of real action.
Right. I kind of, now, of course, it's one of those shows where it starts out now. It doesn't pick up right where the episode, the season finale left off.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of flash back to what happened.
Yep.
Which, but it was one of those, it was due, and I was kind of disappointed where, oh, we come back and now everything has changed.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
and I knew, oh, go ahead.
I actually didn't mind that things had changed. Like it felt organic for the most part. Like the changes that happened felt normal. With Caitlin, you know, moving on and going and working at Mercury Labs, and everyone else finding, you know, other niches now that Barry sort of pushed them all away. You know, I don't know if it made a full sense, but it kind of added up a little bit. Because there were detrimental aspects of the fallout. You know, there were losses. You know, the city was messed up. Ronnie Raymond disappeared, you know, and what's his name? Eddie, you know, sacrificed himself You know, so mm-hmm. there was a lot of fallout from that for people to recover from.
Don't worry, he'll come back at some point.
I agree that, yes, there are, things did change in the season finale, so there would be, but they, you know, it's the whole, we added more, the team's broken up now.
Yeah.
You know, and the team has to get back together again.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, they brought in the Atom Smasher.
Right.
As the villain in this
which
episode.
Which was pretty good. They even did, I mean, it was CGI. It wasn't.
It right. was. But
it wasn't great, but.
Yeah. But I think what was neat about that is that they didn't, you know, they didn't Deus Ex Machina us on this. In that, like, he was, we knew by the end, obviously, that this was an alternate dimension version of this character. That he, because he ended up, he killed himself, essentially, at an earlier, one of the first places we see his face is the dead body of his doppelganger from this world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And no one jumped to that conclusion. You know, there was the puzzle of like, how is he looking like this guy that he killed? You know, no one's jumping to the idea that he could actually be from some other dimension. And I like that. I like that they're making there be mysteries that they're not, you know, Forrest Gumping their way into.
Right. Right. No, and that's true. Oh my God, because that would have ticked me off if someone figured out he was from another dimension right away.
Right, if Sisko had gotten some like leftover signatures, like this doesn't seem like it's of our Earth, like that sort of thing would kind of tick me off. And
well, he's getting grown. Flashes of something.
He is. That is, but he doesn't know what that is either, and that's I find interesting.
Well, no, nobody does because that is not one of the powers that I understand to be of vibes. Yeah. Unless they're pulling a Kitty Pride.
Well, I think they're definitely taking some liberties there, and I'm willing to. First of all, I don't think anyone wants the comic book version of Vibe, so I'm okay with them taking a lot of latitude in the definition of that version. Of
it doesn't have to be the breakdancing version of Vibe. The powers exactly. that Vibe had could be you. I mean, literally, he's like Sky. He could do a lot of stuff that Sky does.
Yeah.
Right, right. Which also is probably why they don't want to really go that way, because people are just, I know that, you know, one character did come before the other, but people are just going to turn around and go, oh, they're just copying off of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And right.
Yeah.
They don't really want that.
And he'd look bad in a dress.
When you look at everything that they're building up for the show, he's obviously going to have a very particular role in the sense of he's going to have a vibe when he sees things that are out of place from the timeline or things that are out of place from another, you know.
So you think he's going to fall into that name that way? Like he's going to name himself as that because.
No, he's not going to name himself.
I think he will. I could see him doing that.
No, because what's the professor's name? Firestorm's.
Why can't I think of his name right now? It just slipped my mind. But yeah, I know you're
Ronnie.
No, the other.
Not Ronnie. The other half.
Oh,
Ronnie, smarter half.
smarter Ronnie. Professor smarter half.
He said Atom Smasher, and so he named him.
Professor Stein.
Stein. Yes. Yeah, that's it. Professor Stein. God. He named Atom Smasher and Sisko gave him a big hug.
Yeah.
So I think at some point this season, Stein is going to go, oh, you having another vibe?
You know, if Maybe. They do that, I'm going to be very sad. That's just too cheap and too, they're better than that.
I'm going to put money on it right now.
Yeah, I'm going to side with you on that one, Dave. But speaking of things that I think they did a little cheaply, I was a little disappointed with a couple things in this episode.
Okay.
One was the, you know, convenient, you know, and underexplained need for Barry's father now that he's free to leave town.
Yeah, they kind of shoved him right out the door.
Yeah, it just seemed.
I can't be around you if you're going to grow into your own man. Duh. He's like 26. Just
right. It's not as if he doesn't have other father figures around shaping him as it is. Like, what, you know, by that logic, you know, Joe should quit the force and leave town too. It doesn't really add up.
Yeah.
Right.
It just seems like they're looking for a convenient way for him to not be around in every episode.
They could have just not showed him. They could have just done that. Yeah, I talked to Dad yesterday and blah, blah, blah. They didn't have to.
Right. They could have conveniently had him just not have a lot of screen time and just have him referenced, you know, third person kind of thing like that.
Right. And the whole thing was, I could see them, if he lived with Barry, that would be an issue. But he could have turned around and said, well, you know what? I just lived with another man for 15 years. I want to have a place of my own, you know?
I want to choose the man that I live with for the next 2 years. Even if he leaves town, it's not as if Barry can't visit him.
Right.
He can run his, you know, past the speed of sound. He can visit anywhere on Earth if he wants to.
Yeah.
Yes. So he can be there in a flesh.
Oh, I see what you did there.
That wasn't even worth acknowledging.
So the other things that bug me. One, first of all, if you're going to hold a Flash Day celebration, know that your guest of honor is actually going to show up. Like, that just seems like poor planning. Like, to have all this you know, pomp and circumstance without even having, like, confirmation that he is going to be there. Mm-hmm. That just seems like poor story writing to me a little bit.
Well, also, if you're going to do an appreciation day for a local superhero, make sure you have the Army and the Navy and the Marines on call just in case.
That is a target just waiting to be, you know, rained fire upon.
No kidding.
And the final thing that bugged me, since I'm nitpicking right now, was the unveiling of the new Flash costume. So, like, they made it seem like it was a big deal with this new costume, and the only difference is the logo.
He stuck a logo on it.
If he had said it came with all these different upgrades and making it more, you know, friction resistant or whatever, different things that they could have come up with, or maybe found a way to make it pop out of a ring, whatever it was, I don't care. Give it some additional gravitas besides, look, we have a brand new costume for you, and it's got the white logo from the future newspapers.
And there's more space for sponsors, too.
Right, and actually what bugs That'd me about awesome. It is that...
Yes.
What bugs me about Flash, it is that it's Exxon. It's now a paradox, because I saw it from a future image, and I liked it, so I changed this to white.
Right.
So...
Very true.
The future defining the past. They just addressed that issue on Doctor Who this week.
I heard about that and I didn't get to see that. I was too busy avoiding Gotham.
I won't give it away. You go enjoy it on your free time. It was
right.
I have mixed feelings about it. We could talk about it another time.
Yeah, next one. All right. So that's a Flash. We still have like con stuff to go over and you know Gotham to diss. So
and Arrow and the Good Show.
Arrow and the Good Show.
You Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the good show.
Oh, come on.
There's no question here. It's the good show.
No, I like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But Flash, come on. And you got to admit, Arrow has been really good.
Dave, all right. Are you caught up on all these shows? Besides the Arrow, I know you're not watching the Arrow right now. Are you caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes.
And you saw the premiere of Flash?
Yes.
Stack ranked, which would you put higher?
Ah, oh, crap. But he's a Marvel guy.
I'm just asking the question. I'm not buying.
Oh, God. Putting me on the spot. So far this season, I would have to go with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And believe it or not, it's because of the very issues you had with the premiere of Flash. You know, and my other issue that I already mentioned. It's kind of like it was good, but it was just like, oh, why do they have to do those things?
So, I rest my case, John. but I will share my thoughts on Arrow because I watched that. I know, did either of you? Oh, you did. Okay. So, the sizzle reel was good, though, John. You should watch it. It was good. It was interesting foreshadowing of the rest of the season. It showed Constantine in it. So, it's worth it.
Just for that, I will watch it.
You should.
Sorry, I wasn't talking at my... There we go, I'm better.
That's okay. So I liked the premiere. So this season they come back from the happy ending for Ollie and Felicity, where they go off into the sunset.
And it wasn't a dream sequence. And surprise. It wasn't a dream sequence.
They actually... Happy life. Everything going swimmingly. And Ollie even ready to propose to Felicity to take it to the next level. When... income their forlorn superhero friends asking for help because the city is in ruins because of these weird masked vigilantes on the opposite side of things.
Basically coming up to him, hat in hand, please, sir, please, more kick-ass, please.
Right. Everybody but Diggle, because Diggle's holding a grudge. So
you shouldn't refer to his kid like that.
Yes. It is the grudge. But generally, I actually liked the way this episode played out. I liked how they came back to it. It felt fairly organic. There are definitely some questions that I left aching over with that, like how Quentin Lance could align himself, could at all anyway justify aligning himself with Damian Dark is beyond me. That's something that I'm going to have to get some backstory on to understand.
If it's anything other than they threaten the life of his daughter.
It's got to be some sort of misinformation, blackmailish type situation that he doesn't really know what he's signing on for 100%, just that he's protecting the people he cares about.
Yeah, because if it's anything else, it's like you said when we start talking about the other stuff, it would be completely out of character. He's the kind of guy who would give his own life to protect other people and
right.
instead of hurting the city like he, you know.
Yeah. I did have a little bit of an issue with Ollie's telecast as the Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Because who the hell is not going to piece together that he's that's Oliver Queen? I mean, it's one thing shadowed under a hoodie, you know, in the dark streets at night, but to actually go on television essentially showing your whole face except it doesn't really.
No, the Domino mask hides everything.
Well, like it would have been better if he had. It would have been better if he had a pair of glasses on. I mean, seriously, that is.
And his hair parted on the other side.
And you gotta love it. Arrow is dead, but you know, I may be green. I may have the same voice scrambler. I may look the same and have the same equipment, but I'm the Green Arrow.
Yeah, so that did sound totally a different bit.
So you're saying the way they introduced, they changed his name was kind of cheesy?
It was a little cheesy. It was definitely
totally different
cheesy.
Guy. Pay no attention to the color.
He basically gave a press conference talking about what the Arrow had done for the city before he died, and that now he's turning over a new, now he's coming in to fill in where he left off. As the Green Arrow. It wasn't even that great of a renaming, rebranding type thing. It was very poorly veiled. And it bugged me a little bit. But again, even that I'm willing to forgive to a bit. I liked how they're now introducing mystical things. And how Ollie apparently has experience in this matter. That we'll probably get exposed to via his flashback 5 years ago. That they'll be showing this season.
Right.
Yeah, stick that in your Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ooh, we have magic in D.C. now. We can say things like
that. You know, technology significantly advanced is indiscernible from magic.
Ha ha ha.
But the thing that pissed me off about the episode was the final scene, the 6 months later scene.
It was
blatant.
Well,
it was like soap opera technique of cliffhangering half the season in one clip.
Yeah, but even though everybody knows that Ollie is supposed to wind up with Canary, right? There's no way that they can kill off Felicity Smoke at this.
They can't. So Dave, to bring you up to speed, there was a scene at the end of the episode, the very last scene of the episode. is 6 months later, and it shows Ollie standing in front of a recently buried grave and a headstone and with a tear running down his eye. And they show Flash running up next to him in a you know, respectable funerary suit after obviously services were done and just be like, sorry, I was late, dealing with Zoom, you know, and then sort of consoled him a bit and then left. And Ollie's, you know, kneeling by the grave and a tear running down his cheek. And vows vengeance or something like that. But they never show the name on the grave, so you have no idea who it is. So that's their big teaser setup for like the next half of the season, is be wondering who died and at, you know, under what circumstances.
Okay. So let's start a superhero speak pool here. I've got $2 on the police captain and I've got $5 on the sister.
I'm going for Diggle. I think he's the top of my list.
Nah. Well, okay. Well, this is the pool. Okay, so
yep. I think it's Dave? number one choice is Diggle. What would be my number two choice? I would hate it to be Felicity, but I would put her at odds as the second favorite.
Nah, I can't see it.
I think John's on to something with the sister.
It could be. It could be Thea.
Because she's yeah. not... I don't think there's any canon. They're not going to make her...
No.
There are a couple of characters she could turn into, but not really quite.
Well, there is. Well, she's Thea. She went by Thea Queen. She's actually Thea... What's his name? Merlin.
Yeah.
And there was some other... Last year, I remember there being some swirling rumors of what other character she could transform into that would be fitting to her characterization, but I can't remember who it was. So there are ways that they can keep her fit into things. For now, she's Speedy, and I think that works just fine. Although she seems to hate that name. Well, the one thing I did find interesting, they kept using the code names while they're out in the field, obviously, of Black Canary and Speedy. They never said what Diggle's code name was. They didn't call him Diggle either, but they never said what his call sign was out in the field. And I'm curious I'm curious why they're holding that at bay. The costume that he's wearing right now, everyone seems to be in agreement, looks basically like he's being Guardian, but they don't seem to want to call him that out loud, at least not at the premiere.
They should call him Freeze.
Yeah.
Freeze?
Well, because, okay, so walking down the street, you've got a woman dressed in red with an arsenal of weapons, and they're like, yes, hooray, thank you for saving us. A guy dressed in green, arrow weapons, yes, save us. A guy, a man of color in a mask and a gun, and they're and the first thing they're going to say is freeze.
God.
Just, okay. Yes, horrible.
All right.
Leave it to John to go in the jaded direction.
John, I might need your resignation.
That's okay. Because you know I don't mean it. It's just, I don't know. I think there'd be as much of a fan uprising if Diggle went if Smoke. Because it just, you know, the one thing that's really missing from all these shows is a show where they show that one of the good guys can get away with having a family.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would like it if for the next 3 years, Diggle was in this helping and a main character and still had the wife and kid on the side. And we watched them grow up.
Yeah.
Cause it's just, you know, cause this constant, the writers have to always create your main characters, your heroes always have to go through hell. Nobody stays a hero if they're constantly having family members die and
you
know, getting divorced, and it just doesn't happen. Yeah. He has to have a reason to continue.
Right. Well, the thing is, too, all three of us need to keep in mind. I mean, in my mind, I've already fired John. No, the three of us need to keep in mind is that it is a soap opera. You know, it's a male soap opera. It is a comic book TV show.
It's a primetime melodrama.
True.
No one stays dead forever. So whoever it is could always come back because they also have introduced Lazarus Pit.
Yeah, they have.
Worst comes to worst.
I don't think after they've buried him, they're going to dig him back up and put him in Lazarus Pit. I don't think it works that well for that kind of thing.
I don't know. We'll see.
Who said his body was buried there?
Oh.
Just because you see a gravestone doesn't mean someone's actually buried
there. That's true.
So anyway. So now should we talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I won't call it the better show.
All right, fine. I haven't seen it. I know two episodes have gone by already. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen any of it?
No.
So far?
I was going to say that Clark Gregg was at New York Comic Con, and he did an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel, and they showed episode 3 for everyone there.
And you didn't see it.
I missed it.
Well, you missed the premiere for Supergirl, so that just, you know, right there, it shows you weren't paying attention, man.
Why do you even go if you're not going to watch these things, Dave? I mean, we send you out there to represent us. And
No. I was working at the
con. Oh, okay.
I was busy, you know, being a little whore for my friend. So anyway.
So you set up a little...
I wasn't sure that... I knew some weird things happened behind that table, but...
Okay. And I'm the one getting fired?
Oh, that came out. Anyway. But based on the two episodes I have seen, I like where they're going.
Oh, yeah. They've really, first of all, in the first episode, without giving too much away on John here.
No, go ahead. I've got them both.
I think that what's his name? The guy who plays Fitz should be nominated for an Emmy just for his performance in that one episode. Like, his emotional arc in that episode was, I thought, amazing. Like, for one, he had, you know, he went into Morocco with nerves of steel after having been, like, barely coherent for half of the last season. Like, the determination that allowed him to transform himself and become this, you know, cold, you know, field agent that he's become is remarkable. And his emotional outcry at the end of that episode, after essentially admitting defeat, was just, you know, that's Oscar material right there.
Right. It's so funny too, because like the whole beginning of the episode, you know, they don't really until it's like, I think it's almost the first half, they don't really address Simmons.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, we come back from the one commercial and they talk about Fitz and we see that he's out, you know, in Morocco trying to get information about the obelisk. Yeah,
I don't know what they're calling it. Maybe an obelisk. But he's looking for some scroll that supposedly is known to be connected to this obelisk and its past.
Right. And they go through this whole thing and he...
Monolith.
And
they're calling it. Monolith.
Monolith. Right. And he gets to it and it's just a Hebrew word for death.
Yes.
You know, when he finally opens it. And, but yeah, like it was just, it was interesting. I had almost forgotten that, oh yeah, she got eaten by that.
It was the last 3 seconds of the
show. Right. That was nearly a post-credit scene to the episode.
Right.
So yeah, that was, and they also reminded us of that by basically they had that cathartic scene where he's basically admitting defeat, admitting that she's probably gone and dead, you know, permanently, because of the scroll. And then they show us flip side of her, like, on some weird alien planet, you know, running for her life. There's been a lot of speculation as to where that is, by the way. And I'm sure we'll find out more over the next couple episodes. Generally, I think the most common consensus is that maybe one of the moons of the Kree homeworld.
That's what I thought.
And whether that was a portal to that for... I think generally my idea is either that's where the Kree who came to Earth, you know, millennia ago, had sent certain Inhumans either as a proving ground to hone their abilities or as essentially a dumpster for the ones that were too hard to control or too dangerous.
Right.
And Simmons shall be their queen.
and that, you know, and that's true. And it's what's fascinating, again, when they show her, she's running from something. They never show what it is, but she's definitely running. And she notices she has a cut and she's, you know, bleeding a little bit. And she quickly gets some mud and covers up the cut so that the blood isn't there anymore. Almost as if maybe that's a smell that's attracting whatever's chasing
her. Predator?
Who knows? Alien predator.
Right.
So you're saying they'll have an episode in the future called To Catch an Alien Predator?
I have a feeling that that's going to come back.
Yeah. Well, in the least, I think there's going to be Tremor, After Effects. Sorry, John, spoilers. They did get her back in the second episode. And it seemed like, I'm sure a lot of people might have looked at that as like, well, that was too quick and easy and clean. Although it wasn't. It was kind of a nail biter. But they sort of alluded to it not being over by the end scene with her where she basically woke up from a nightmare and took comfort in Fitz, you know, sleeping next to her, and definitely is shaken by those months that she's been away, and that probably will affect her for a while. But I do want to get to the point here. She was swallowed by the obelisk, or by the monolith, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's been a trend to the trigger for that monolith in that it's only liquefied like that, other than in the chamber that they found to work it, by the presence of aliens, or Inhumans.
It was doing that constantly. That it kept switching back and forth.
But it wasn't. It was sort of. It didn't have a period to it. It wasn't on a cycle per se, that they could discern. And, like, the times they showed it happening in the show was whenever an Inhuman walked near it. And then the only time that it happened without really an Inhuman specifically walking near it is in the second episode when the other guy that they brought in walked near it, who was Asgardian.
Right.
So
are you sure that
Skye was probably nearby too? But
I thought Skye was with them when they went in that room.
She probably was. So it definitely seemed like there was something triggering it, and I want to say I think it was a proximity trigger. But which would beg the question: would that mean that Simmons might be an Inhuman?
Right. That's what I was thinking.
That'd serve her right.
For after her what she did, xenophobic after what she phase did last season.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She knew better. Come on.
No, but anyway.
I do like that Mac is coming around on those matters, though.
Yeah.
And they're working towards a team of Inhumans, though, right, though not easily. They're not getting clearance on most of them.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, and it's they're definitely building to a mistrust issue going on. A mistrust for what this rogue shield is doing, because they're still saying it's a rogue thing. It's not like it's officially a government agency.
Right. They're
anymore.
Not. Yeah, they're definitely off the radar, you know, because they had conflict in the first episode with that other government team, which is an actual government team,
right,
which got named by the end of the episode as the ATCU, and I'm pretty sure that's going to end up being a sort of primordial form to the Agency of S.W.O.R.D.
Yeah.
Right.
Although we kind of said the same thing about Real S.H.I.E.L.D. last season, and that didn't pan out. But that aside, I have stronger feelings, I think, on that matter with this one. And I almost kind of think that one person that they introduced who was leading that group, who they gave her a name, but that may not have been her actual name, I think may end up becoming Abigail Brandt.
You know, I mean, that's the whole thing, is I was getting that feeling too, just because they say that this agency is put in place to, you know, look for these Inhumans. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for alien threats on Earth.
Right.
You know, which is what S.W.O.R.D. does. So it's like, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It fits. And if it fits,
no,
it
it's
ships.
Simmons.
So anyway, so yeah, I think that's interesting. And we also have the third party, which is Lash, who's apparently going around.
Lashing out?
Lashing out, yes.
Come on, that was too easy.
Too punny, John.
Mm-hmm.
Too punny.
Yes, no, and that's true. He well, they showed him like, oh no, not Lash. I'm thinking of what's the other guy's name?
Lincoln.
Lincoln, yeah. Where he was, you know, trying to live a quote unquote normal life now.
Yeah.
And
not going so well for him now. They kind of screwed that up.
No, yeah, exactly. The poor guy, you know. I mean, he just wants to help. And Skye, I'm sorry, Daisy won't leave him alone. You know, I mean, that's an interesting thing too, right? Like, two seasons we've been calling her Skye, and now she wants to be called Daisy. She's embracing that.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
well, I think that was part of her path last season, is accepting her background, from not knowing about it to finding out about it and somewhat rejecting it to, in the end, embracing it. Embracing the name, I think, is part and parcel to that, because it's an identity finally that she didn't really have to embrace. Like, Skye was a pseudonym, her hacker name. You know, that's like me, you know, expecting everyone to call me, you know, Beardiac all the time. You know, it's not something I would impose on people necessarily, even though it's cool.
No, I think it's, to me, it would be more akin of, you've been Ben your whole life, but then you find your birth certificate and you find out your name is actually Bob.
Yeah, but she wasn't Skye her whole life. She was only Skye since she basically started, you know, using computers in her teen years and started hacking things.
Oh, okay.
She had a name before that, which she hated, you know, a lot too. And she just was not a fan of it. So she sort of relegated it to archaic information. But
well,
I think
Skye Hyde is better than Mary Lou Poots. So
yes, it's true. But yeah, I think in the end she embraced her real identity, because she was no longer she was no longer rejecting what that what came with that, the baggage that came with it. You know, she accepted her father for her what he was, even though they put the whammy on him to let him have a normal life again. And so part of that was right. also embracing the name that, you know, he gave her.
Right. No, that's true. I mean, it's interesting. I hope that I hope they eventually just start calling her Quake. But that's
yeah. yeah, they haven't gotten there yet. And even though they have their own version of Cisco in the form of Mac, he didn't call her that. He called her Tremors. So
right, right.
He's calling.
Right. But that, I mean, that's one of the interesting things with the TV show is they don't call anyone by their names.
Yeah.
Because they don't call it's not Black Canary. It's the Marvel Universe version.
Dead Canary?
No.
Mockingbird.
Mockingbird. Yeah. Oh, they don't call Mockingbird. They don't call her Mockingbird.
Right, but she hasn't had a reason to need a code name per se in the field. So I kind of see that. Like I think because the way I see it is those types of names like Mockingbird and even like Hawkeye are their code names. They're not alter egos for those guys. They're field names that they use to avoid using their real identities so that their real identities don't get revealed to their enemies.
Unless you make a video and post it on, you know, everywhere and broadcast right. it to the entire city.
Right.
Right. Right. No, that's true.
What's the green arrow?
I'm the arrow now with more green.
No, anyway, yes, that's, I don't know. It's,
you know what? I can't wait to see Supergirl, damn it.
Yeah.
I think, hold on, I was going to say, I think it's one of the reasons, though, people get upset with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they're like, it's not a superhero show.
But it never
was. Whereas if...
They never claimed to be a superhero show.
I know, but that seems like that's what people want. That's what they're complaining.
So go watch a superhero show. They're on Netflix.
Fine.
The good yes, ones are on true. Netflix.
I know. Daredevil's on Netflix. Jessica Jones will be in November.
Yep. Can't wait.
And yeah,
and Supergirl's coming up. I'm yep. really excited. Yes, that.
I don't. I that is was. True.
You
I
was. Excited.
I was. Yes, I was. I were.
Oh,
I was a little bit disheartened when I saw the costuming for Red Tornado.
Okay, hold on. Before we get to mm-hmm. that, before we get off of Agents mm-hmm. of S.H.I.E.L.D., there was one last thing. There was a rumor that just came out. This didn't come from the convention. This was just something I saw online today, and I felt we had to share this.
I think it's also been squashed already, but go ahead.
You need to stop going to Reddit, but go ahead.
That's fine. No, go ahead.
We should discuss it. That the Inhumans movie has been put on hold or canceled.
Right. So that was, I read that too, Dave. That it was in, I read that like yesterday or the day before that it was not being discussed as such at the Comic-Con, but supposedly at the bar scene, that was the word on the street, that the Inhumans right. movie was being dropped. And the rumor mill was that it was basically the ramifications of the battle between Kevin Feige and his new leadership at Disney versus Ike Perlmutter and his television universe, and basically trying to cut them off.
Yeah.
But the reality is that all of it was rumor, and none of that is true.
Yeah, right. The rumors don't usually start unless there's some kernel of truth they can wrap it around.
That's not necessarily true. Rumors start all the time that have no justification.
Well, yeah, but not big ones. I mean, you know.
All it takes is two guys at a bar in New York City after Comic-Con speculating that they think Inhumans will be canceled as a result of some things, and the rumor mill will be off to the races.
Wait, hold on a sec. That's right. You heard it here, folks. At Superhero Speak, they're putting off the Inhumans movie. This is for real.
No, my whole issue with that was them making this big deal about it. But in the long run, also, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is shown on ABC, which is owned by Disney. Yeah. So it's all connected. Anyway.
And Disney's not going to shoot off their own foot. That's not their way of doing things. I mean, yes, they're making these changes, and I think, and I still stand by them. I think it makes sense because from what I understand, I think this is a good move because I think that it's the type of leadership they were getting from the Marvel side, from Ike Perlmutter, is what drove Edgar Wright away. It's what drove Joss Whedon crazy at the end of Age of Ultron. And, you know, it's what gave us some sketchy choices in the cut that finally went to the theaters for that movie. So I think that this is I think the move was smart. And I don't necessarily have anything against Ike Perlmutter, because I do like the shows we're getting as a result of his leadership. But I don't want the movie universe to suffer from over control.
Right. Right. But I also don't want them to stop connecting the
dots. No. And that was actually what I'd read more recently today. First of all, Kevin Feige addressed that issue specifically last week, and saying that there's definitely one of the things he's actively working on is trying to keep those connections strong, and that there definitely is an opportunity for characters from the TV shows to transition up to the cinematic universe. That the only reason that hasn't happened more quickly is because the movie universe is a slow growth. It takes them, you know, they only put out, you know, 2 to 3 movies a year. There's only so much momentum they can build. The TV series is, you know, there's a bunch of those coming out all year long with hours and hours of material. So
right.
It's easy for them to propel stories forward faster.
But if they could have fit in a scene for Thor to go take a bath, they could have stuck one in with Coulson walking up and everybody going, "Oh, you're dead."
Well, maybe. I think, hold on.
There was a different version of that bath scene, though, that might have fit better into the movie, unfortunately.
Is that the one with the rubber duck in it?
No. There was one where instead of him seeing more visions, he ended up being possessed by some Norn entity and was saying things about the Infinity Stones that fit more into the story arc of what we saw in the movie.
Hmm.
Well, first off, let's be honest. The bath scene was really an excuse to show Thor without his shirt.
Yes, it was also an excuse to tie into Ragnarok.
Right, but I think the shirt thing is more important. And
whatever floats your boat, Dave.
You're speaking for your wife, right, Dave?
I am saying this now. I've kind of said this before, and I'm sticking with this. And anyone who doesn't agree with me, let me know. I'll
in the air.
Disagree with you. You can't do Civil War without setting it up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You're right. And
setting up distrust between metahumans and the public.
And they're doing that. They're actively doing right. that. And I think that's important. I think it's important to the story to show that there is this animosity that's growing based on the series of events, based on this climactic step-by-step, you know, reveal that these types of things are out there, and and revealing them mostly through the detriment that they cause. Right. So most of what the public is seeing is like the aftermath of Winter Soldier and the aftermath of the Sokovia, you know, incident. You know, they're not seeing the heroics so much as they're seeing the negative side of things, and that's building a public distrust. And they'll be building more on that in the series of in this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well.
Right. And also and also in all honesty, because the Registration Act doesn't make sense in the movie universe by itself right now, because
there's no mass
there is no secret identities. Everyone knows who these people are. So it's a really stupid, like, to sit there and go, "Oh yeah, you can do it, blah, blah, blah." No, but if you sit there and say there's this issue with all these metahumans popping up and no one's controlling them, but to try to explain that in the first 10 minutes of a movie, mm-hmm. like trying to create Ultron in the first 5 minutes of a movie.
Yeah, that's just stupid.
It's going to be
First 10 minutes of the movie, just have Spider-Man swing by. Everybody looks up and goes, "Hey, that guy's wearing a mask. We need to find out who he is."
I know that's perfect. How DC might do it. But
hey, hey,
sorry.
And in all honesty, all of the heroes so far, there's no major reason to distrust them. In fact, anything Age of Ultron showed, you have to do everything in your power to trust them. You know, they actually shaved people instead of letting buildings fall with thousands of people in them.
They also had
action snapping necks. Yes, I know.
Well, also the Battle of New York resulted in action figures of most of them, so they weren't all that veiled.
Right. So yeah, I mean to just sit there and have one event at the beginning of Civil War to now everyone doesn't trust them won't make sense. So again, you have to set it up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so by the time the movie comes out, it's like, oh, okay, that's logical. Yeah. That, you know, they want
this. Imagine
registration.
But I think it's going to be
I imagine if you want to know who they are, you just go down to your local shmarma and see the picture of them that they took while they were eating right, that they all signed.
Thumbs up, holding shmarma in one hand.
Yep.
I think, though, I get the impression that the Registration Act isn't going to be what it is. It's going to be some other, it's going to be some form of that, but it's going to be different in some way. I think that I think that's what they were alluding to with the Accords. In that end credit scene in Age, the Accords are the cinematic version of the Civil War Registration Act, and the Accords are probably going to be something more international rather than just being a United States, you know, driven thing.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll do it a little different, but I think to have it seem more global, you know, and setting up more mistrust and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, it just helps when you have a TV show behind it, you know. Unlike Warner Brothers, who goes, oh yeah, no, the movie and TV universes have the.
All right, look, you know, really, you don't have to keep hitting that nail because I already understand.
All right, well, because, you know, they do have, Warner Brothers does have another show on TV that's not even on their network, it's on Fox, before Supergirl comes out, that already premiered. We could talk about it.
Do we have?
So, Supergirl, right. Okay. Supergirl it is.
Did you hear that Constantine's going to be on Arrow this season?
Look, Michael Chiklis is going to come in and save the day.
That is true. He is going to do what Gordon seemed to not be able to do and actually turn things around in some form.
Well, let's put it this way. I heard what happened. I mean, at the end of last season, they find the Batcave.
Yes, supposedly.
Which angered every true Batman fan on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the beginning of this season, they're trying to break
the Joker, which angered even more Batman fans.
At the beginning of this season, they're trying to break into the Batcave. You know, with the person who's supposed to grow up to be the world's greatest detective, he can't figure out the combination.
See, if I was watching it, I'd know more about that. I've been avoiding it so far.
Oh, did you see it, John?
No.
So what they do is they decide to blow up the door to get into the secret hidden room.
And that's when the smoke monster comes out and the thing starts to a timer. And we find out it was all a dream, a really bad dream.
So basically he finds this recording. Bruce finds this recording that was left for him in a case his parents died. And he goes, I'm glad that you figured out the combination was your birthday. Like he didn't. Try that. Like, seriously.
I would not try that.
And he's listening to this while he's got detective. He's listening to this while he's got a rock in his hand and there's a smashed box.
The world's greatest detective did not try his own fucking birthday. Well, I'm sorry.
He's not the world's greatest detective yet, obviously.
Sucks.
Yeah, there's something to be said about if you're going to be the world's greatest detective, you can't, like, it's not like something that you when you start hit off puberty, as an idiot. It just happens.
Yeah, there's got to be a ramp up to that. You've got to start off being inquisitive and being able to think through things.
Well, like, yeah, but the first two combinations you're going to try your birthday and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, come on.
Right.
Well, you would try
obvious. You try your parents' birthdays. You try their wedding anniversary. You try your own birthday. Those are the obvious ones. Period.
Right. Exactly.
Don't resort immediately to explosives. unless your only parent figure is an idiot butler.
For those of us who work in the computer industry and we know about secure passwords,
we would start with explosives, right?
You know what the most common passwords are that people use that you tell them not to use.
Everybody
when they're setting up an account.
Kids' names, kids' birthdays,
and password.
Same thing
as the password,
right? So yeah, and then
You know what? One of the most used passwords in the world is that he could have tried.
Password?
Superman.
Oh, Superman.
No.
Yes. That was
funny.
Superman doesn't exist in that universe.
Doesn't matter.
So we're supposed to believe this kid grows up to be Ben Affleck. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, the chin came in during puberty, like I said.
I could picture him making some bad movies in his 20s.
he started by trying with blindfold. And then moved his way up to a bat costume.
Yes. So.
So Gotham's back, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And we really haven't been watching. We're just making fun of it.
Right. I've been explicitly avoiding it, and I don't know. I haven't decided how much longer I'm going to explicitly avoid it. I have reluctantly not deleted it from my DVR yet.
But at the convention, they showed a sizzle reel that we all just watched today, which is now making us go,
Yeah, I will say that the scene at the end with, first of all, they showed, which already happened in previous episode, that the idiot Jerome, whatever, who's been sort of their de facto Joker-ish character, gets killed, thankfully. There was much rejoicing.
It's because the fans threatened
him. And they took it to the nth degree. Like, he gets stabbed in the neck, so he's obviously not going to live. But as he's, you know, he's got his hair slicked back, and he's, you know, lying on the stage so that his blood ends up trickling down from his mouth on either side. So he basically looks like the Joker as he's dying and not being the Joker.
And then they use the explosives.
Right. But the thing that's coming up in future episodes is Michael Chiklis is joining to replace the now killed chief or commissioner, who I forget what her name was. But, you know, she got killed off in one of the recent episodes. And so Michael Chiklis is coming in as the new chief. And the first thing he's doing is you know, shaking up the ranks and throwing out all of the obviously corrupt cops.
Right, right. Well, and the other thing that's going on this season is the forensic scientist at the precinct, who is the Riddler.
Yeah. No.
Edward Nygma.
Really? We haven't been beat over the head with that for the last two seasons.
He's going full Riddler.
You know, they decided everyone liked the original Spider-Man.
The Willem Dafoe Green Goblin.
Yes.
Talking to himself, it's like, mirror thing.
Yes. Everyone loved that scene in the Spider-Man movie, so we're going to rip that off this entire season.
Right.
And have him talk to himself in the mirror as he's going crazier and crazier.
Schizophrenia was not one of the Riddler's things.
If it works for Gollum, it can work for the Riddler.
Oh, God.
Soon he'll be running around in a loincloth with straggles of hair.
Well, Gollum did challenge the Hobbit to a
contest of riddles. That's true.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah.
Comes from circle. Oh. All fits so together.
All ties together.
So that's what he looks like when he gets old.
Yes, there is another tease that of something upcoming this season that might make you more apt to watch at least in a couple episodes. As much as I don't really care for the characterization of the Penguin, he just is obsequious in a way that pisses me off.
Well, until he stabs you in the back, he's actually one of the better ones. I thought.
I don't know. Better in a he's the cleanest mud in the pit.
Yeah, but he's the one that everybody underestimates. They underestimate him until they realize that he just shot them.
He's so smug about it all the freaking time, and it pisses me off.
Yes.
So anyway,
part of his, gosh.
He will. We've already met his mother in this show so far, but they're now going to introduce his father, and his father will be played by none other than Paul Reubens, Pee Wee Herman, who, if you recall, played the same role in Batman Returns.
Oh my God.
I have no jokes I can use for that. It writes itself. It's just, I mean, great for Paul Reubens. I mean, whatever, I won't even say anything. Just he's actually a really funny and really good guy and a good actor.
Oh yeah. I have no qualms with Paul Reubens. I'm sure he'll class the place up.
Yeah.
To whatever extent he can.
Right. Him and Chiklis.
Yes.
You know.
Chiklis.
And I heard eventually, though, like in episode 6, Chiklis turns orange and gets this like rocky complexion. Oh, I don't know where they're going with that, but yeah.
He also sort of goes on some vigilante justice persuasions of his own that kind of go off book. The S.H.I.E.L.D. reference, anybody?
Oh, that's right. Anyway.
Wasn't he also in a show called The Commish?
Yes, where he was like a family guy. And he was also
Dad in No Ordinary Family.
No Ordinary Family, yep. Right. That lasted a season.
Yeah. I can't remember what his power was in that. Was he indestructible? He was,
invulnerable.
He was like the dad in The Incredibles.
Yes, of course.
That was The Incredibles.
It pretty much was.
It was the rip-off live-action version. Yes.
Wasn't Danielle Penn, what's her name? The person who plays Caitlin Snow was in that, too.
Yes, I think so.
Tanya Terry, or something like that. Or Panamaker. I forget what her last name is.
Panamaker.
So, yes, everyone should go out right now and find No Ordinary Family on DVD. Good luck.
Watch that, and then Gotham will seem not as bad.
Exactly. Or The Cape.
Oh don't, no, don't say that. Don't do that.
Do you want
to
turn people
listeners?
Off to the genre altogether?
Jeez.
No, then Gotham looks good by comparison.
I don't know.
Because you've gouged your eyes out by then.
If you go read my review of season one on Rotten Tomatoes, I basically said the opposite. I said The Cape was more watchable. I gave it a one star.
Yes, because you can't give it zeros.
Right.
A lot of great TV stuff. We can't talk about Supergirl yet because it hasn't premiered.
Except at Comic-Con.
I know.
Which you missed.
Which he conveniently had other things going on.
I was busy. And then, of course, Constantine was canceled, but he'll be on the Arrow.
He was reorganized into other series.
So
it was a restructuring.
So now since we're talking about television, I did talk to a couple people. Oh, yeah? You can give me that, right? Like I might have missed.
Besides the people coming up to get signatures on their artwork.
Yes, or buying prints from Greg. I walked around one day and I talked to a couple people. And one of the people I talked to
slapped twice.
I talked to Eric Dean Seaton, who is a television director himself. He has worked with Nickelodeon and Disney XD and, you know, a lot of those shows on there.
As long as he's not responsible for The Descendants, I'm okay with him.
I don't believe he's responsible for The Descendants. I think we're safe there.
Okay.
He's also done stuff for ABC, but he has his own independent comic out called Legend of the...
Legend of the Montemagi.
Yes, thank you. He even says that people usually mispronounce it.
People put it in the wrong place.
He is going to be coming on for a full episode, but he's like, while we're here, why don't we have a quick chat? So, everyone, here is our first interview from New York Comic Con 2015 with Eric Dean Seaton. Enjoy.
Hey everyone, we're now here with Eric Dean Seaton, author of Legend of Montemagi.
Legend of the Montemagi.
So, this is the 10th annual New York Comic Con.
Yes.
Is this your second
one.
All right, what do you think of it this year?
Love it. First of all, it's New York, so it's the multicultural mecca of the world. I was on 3 panels this year, which for the first time, which was great, which actually helped sales. It's super crowded, which I love. Now I'm only worried about next year. They're talking about changing the floor plan. And we've had this spot for 2 years in a row. And I'm like, hey, what will I spot back? So hopefully I can still get a good spot.
Yeah, they're actually pretty good here with, you know, trying to keep people where they're happy at.
Good.
Yeah. So one of the things I was asking people this weekend. So the cons have been getting bigger and bigger.
Yes.
And obviously because comic book culture has become pop culture at this point. Do you think that they can keep growing like this? And at what point do you think the bubble's going to burst?
I don't think the bubble's going to burst as long as they keep the key word of Comic-Con in there as comic. Once it becomes just multicultural media and the comics are pushed aside and nobody cares about them, then yes, it's just like paying brass money, you're paying through the nose to go to any convention just to see some Rob Knob with some celebrities. But the core of this is fandom and people being free to express themselves. That's why you see people in costumes. And, you know, it's funny because when we were probably kids, nerd was a bad word. But now it's a nerd, it's a word of power and it's embracing. And all to me it means is that you're so passionate about whatever it is you like that you're proud of it and you wear it on your sleeve or on your head or on your shoes. Over your body.
So you're actually a director, a television director.
I am.
What made you decide to go into comics?
See, a couple things. Growing up, I love storytelling, and I used to read comic books. And comic books is actually what got me into TV and directing in the first place, because it was a 3D version of storytelling. I wasn't that good an artist, not good enough to be an artist. But I like stories. But directing always seemed like something I ended up wanting to do. When I went to college, I didn't even know you could be, I still was like hesitant about being a director, but I saw a friend of mine doing it. And that's why, as a side note, I always encourage about people multicultural and people see, when you see other people do things, it empowers you to be able to try and do it. And that friend is now an actor, and I ended up going on and becoming a director, and he was a director before I was. So I've always wanted to tell stories, and kind of what got me into comic books is when I moved out to California, I ended up on a show called Living Single, and the director at the time was married to the president of Marvel Comics. So I used to bug him every week, I mean, ad nauseum, everything Marvel, you know, why did you do this, how that, to the point where he invited me to a company they bought called Malibu, because I grew, and they gave me a tour, and the funniest story about that is, so I took my friend who's also in the comics, we came down there dressed in suits. And the moment we came in suits, he was like, oh, why'd you come down here dressed in suits? And we were like, well, but you're giving us a tour, you know, we want to represent. Right. He's like, yeah, well, we got everybody scared because the last people that wore suits was us and we bought the place. So we were there, you know, everybody's looking at us funny as we walked around, you know, and then at the end of the tour, the editor asked me that I want to write a Spider-Man Stop the Violence special. Well, I mean, it's asking anybody that wants to direct, do you want to do a movie? As soon as you get your taste of that thing,
right,
you can't let it go. I did it, and it was either 3 weeks or 3 months later, and I got paid for it. Marvel went into bankruptcy, so I've never seen it. I was at San Diego Comic-Con years ago, and somebody said they had a copy of it, and I offered him anything for it, but he said he would come back, which is San Diego. The moment somebody walks away,
right,
you're never coming back, because they can't find you. So I've never seen it, but that bug was lit, the fire was lit, I had to do my own. So I created Legend of Mantamaji, and the funny thing was, it was really about creating a story. I had the idea 8 years ago, we started writing them and doing the book 6 years ago, but nobody was going to see until the books came out, because I wanted to do, the one thing I loved in the 90s were all these Image books, and they all, most of them stopped, and I never got to the end, I never saw the end. So I didn't want to do that to anybody, so I was like, I have to have a beginning, middle, and end, so you have to see the full story. Right. So now I've done that, so we waited. It would have been 4 or 5 years, but by the time I got to book 3, because I was doing them like I do, like you direct TV, which is in that I'd write them, he'd draw them, but if something was wrong, I would rewrite my words, or I would then take his images and move them around and say, hey, I'm leaving you a space here, this image is missing. So we edited ourselves. So it's almost like we got a second pass at a story before it came out.
Right, right.
Which I've been telling people, it's not a bad way to do stuff. It's when you're doing TV and movies all the time. So it took 6 years, the books came out this year, they've been doing great. And then we shot a live action short because no matter what comic book convention you go to, if somebody has a monitor, people are paying attention.
Right,
so the true heart of me, it really was, I'm already doing my directing thing. The true heart was I wanted to do a comic book and tell a story. I really waited until after the books were done before I did the live action short. In hindsight, I should have done that first, but it works. People are coming by the booth. People really like the short. I only get one note, which I won't tell you what the note is, but there's nothing I can do about it. It's funny about it. It's a funny note. But everybody loves it, and it's helping sell the books. And the cool thing is, it proves the nuances of the book translate because the costume is exactly the same.
Right.
The only thing different on the costume is the arms, and that's only because we shot it in January, and it was a lot of friends and favors, so their pilot season starts at the end of January.
Yes.
We had a shoot the last week in January, and we were not going to be able to get the equipment, so the suit wasn't ready. So we had to shoot the way. So as the creator, every time I look at his arms, I want to choke somebody. But to anybody that's just looking at it, you don't know. So that's that. You know, any artist, when they do their thing, you know, you're never going to totally love your thing because you're always going to remember something's wrong.
That's true.
So for me, that's what's wrong. But it was, you know, here's the thing. Friends and favors, you got to go when you got to go.
Right,
so that was our last weekend to do it. And I did it while I was directing a show called Unbeatables, which is crazy because I do that by day and then we shot at night. And crazy doing at the same time, but it worked out. So it took 6 months to edit it, and now we run it, and people are really responding to it. And the cool thing is, it's literally the first scene in book one.
Oh, okay.
So there's no so anybody that's hesitant on it, they go, well, I want more. I go, well, that's the point. You got to get the books to get more. But it tells the beginning, middle, and end. You see his powers, his weaknesses,
right.
And you go, that's how the books start off with all this action. So it's a great way to say, hey, this book is different.
You know? Have you thought about shopping it around?
Yeah, we want to shop it around, but here's the thing. First of all, I'd love to do more, but I used up all my friends and favors, so now I have to raise money enough.
Everybody's
talking about, did you do the books crowdfund? I said, no, I did it myself, but I spread it out over 6 years, so it didn't matter. So now we might have to crowdfund to do more episodes, because I'd love to do the girls. I didn't get to show any of the girls, and the book's full of women and strong female characters. And I would like to shop it around. I just say this, and it's honest. It's 2015, and except for, I mean, if Creed opens big, I don't know when this is coming out, but if Creed opens big, Michael B. Jordan will be the first African-American actor under the age of 40 that can open a movie.
Right, right.
And the thing is, my books are multicultural, but the hero is an African-American. So it's,
yes.
There's no point that it's like, hey, it's only for one race, but that one race doesn't even have somebody. You know, if he wasn't, it could be a baseball card, so we could throw them on the table, and you could pick any number of people to be the lead.
Right, right.
And pit them against each other, so you don't have to pay that much, because, you know.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? But he's the only one, so, I mean, there's the thing. He's the only one that's been given the opportunity. There's a bunch of great African-American actors that
can
do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's the only one that's had the opportunity, because I want to make sure that's clear to say there's not something. But the reality is that's what makes it harder.
Right.
And the other thing is, people are fooled because you see a superhero movie every other month. But guess what? They're being done by Marvel and DC, the superhero companies.
Yes.
You saw what Fox did with Fantastic Four.
Right, right.
Now, the reason the X-Men works is because Matthew Vaughn and Bryan Singer are great filmmakers.
Right.
They've made other movies that are great. Once you make a movie, it's still filmmaking, even if it's a superhero genre.
Right, right.
You have to... Look, the thing about Iron Man was, if you read the story, I mean, you saw the movie. He's in a cave. They ask him to build a missile, and he builds a suit. And they never noticed that he was building a suit, but it was great filmmaking and
great acting
that you look past that genre. You know, you look past the silliness of something it can be.
Right.
And that's what Kevin Feige said with Marvel. He said, no matter how ridiculous the origin is, tell that story. Find a way to tell that story.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four did not try to tell the origin of Fantastic Four. That's why it failed. So, you know, to be long-winded, but to say, yes, I would love to do it in other mediums. If it's a movie, you got to find a lead guy. If it's a TV show, you got to find a head writer that's interested in multicultural fantasy.
Right, right.
Nobody's ever seen multicultural fantasy on television yet.
That's true.
So, who's that guy? You know what I mean?
Maybe that's you.
I would love to be that guy. I could be producer, director, executive producer, director.
Right,
I can't
be
a writing showrunner. That's a set skill that some really genius people do.
Okay.
That you have to, you know, really have a, you know, so.
Since you brought him up, I'm going to ask. With Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
Do you think the Fantastic Four might hurt his career?
No. I think Creed will save it, and I think it was such a resounding failure. I don't think it hurt him. I think what hurt, and I don't know any way around it, and I thought they handled it pretty well, is that they would get in interviews and people would attack the fact that he was African-American and Sue Storm was a white woman.
Right, right.
And I thought for the most part, because I was looking for that, they answered it really well, but I thought the studio should have backed him up and made that a powerful point that either you don't ask that stuff or this is the set answer. Because I don't want to name names, but there are other actors that have interesting pasts or believe in interesting things.
Right.
Their movies came out this year and nobody asked them a single thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny. My whole issue was, I love the idea that they did an adopted Sue Storm, but then they had an odd relationship in the movie.
They weren't
show them as a strong family of being a multicultural family, and that would have been such a better message.
And yes, and it would have stood for all those haters and all that type of stuff.
Exactly.
Now, here's the thing. The other catch on that is, it's great that they did that, but it also shows a lack of heroes that we can't find our own heroes that are...
Right, you know, right.
I'm so excited for Black Panther and Power Man.
Yes.
But they're 40 and 50 years old.
Right.
What happened in the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years? Where's those characters?
John Stewart.
Yeah. But wait, he's not in any books, movies, anything. That's what
he
I mean.
He was in the Justice League cartoon, and hopefully they're going to use John Stewart.
Well, we always
Stewart
have one minority
League
character in animation because there's kids watching it. Like, I direct kids shows there. The most multicultural world in the world, but
true.
You look at, then I watch my favorite adult shows, and all of a sudden the multicultural disappears.
That is true.
You know, which is another problem, hopefully, that we will eventually change. So I can't count animation because animation always does it. There's no animation where you see all one race.
Right.
You know what I mean? They know because kids are universal, and race issues, to be honest, don't really affect kids, they affect people when they get older. Because it's adults that put that upon kids.
That is true.
You know?
That is so true.
You know? So,
you're not born with hate, you learn it.
You learn it, yeah. You are not born hating anything. So, and I have two kids. My son loves everything and everybody, and it's interesting to see. It's interesting to be an adult and now see the life through your 3-year-old's eyes.
Right.
Very different, you know, very eye-opening. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so to wrap it up a little bit, one of the things I like to always ask people is, now you've been doing this for a little while now, what kind of advice would you give to someone starting out doing a comic book?
I would say that I was completely naive to the glass ceiling that's represented by the word independent.
Okay.
And not being one of the big two. We always hear, this book is really good for an independent. Now, when you first create your book, all you hear is this book is really good. But after a while, you start to hear the whole sentence.
Right.
And the whole sentence is meaning, basically, people don't expect independence to be any good.
Right, that's
and
true.
It's horrible, and it's not true. And there are tons of great independent books out there. But it's a very, 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 very thick glass ceiling to break through that we are slowly but surely banging the door, you know, banging our way through. Hopefully, if we can make it through, we make a big enough hole that some other people can come in, or if somebody else bangs their way through, we can get through their hole. But I said, be prepared for that. You know, that's a huge thing to look out for. I hate it. Especially I wouldn't hate it so much had I not be a television director when there's 100 networks.
Right.
When there's 100 places to think things going on.
Right.
Not just two companies dominating everything. So the stigmatism that everybody had over the past 30, 40 years is not there on television.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
You're dealing with other stuff. You're dealing with having more gays, lesbians, minorities, different genders in television. You're not dealing with... You're dealing with that happening, not dealing with there's only two. There's only NBC and CBS.
Right.
That's it. No. There's 100 networks.
You know? Yes.
So it's very hard. It's frustrating if you let it be. But people should be aware. Yeah.
All right. And then how do you measure success?
I think success, being interviewed by you, that's very successful. I'm not being like, I know it sounds a little over the top, but you got to be honest. Think about it. You spend all this time, 6 years doing a book, and people want to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
That's a level of success. Being here at the condom is a great level of success. The books were sold, the word spreading. But because we're an independent, we're constantly getting the word out. The real success is going to happen when you spread the word or somebody else spreads the word, not just somebody buys the books and goes, oh, I really like that, and then never tells anybody.
Right.
Spread the word. You know,
okay.
When everybody tweets about Star Wars and Marvel on their Facebook page,
right.
and they're not, tweet something else. Because guess what? You're doing their work for them.
Right.
So
exactly.
Everyone wants to spread the Marvel thing, or my wife loves Star Wars. We can't wait. But at the same time, tweet something else too, or Facebook something else too.
Right.
Something new.
All right.
Yeah.
And then where can people find you online?
Find us online at our website, which is Legend of the Spell It, because everybody can never say Mantamagi. MANTAMAJI.com. Go to our site. You can find the books at Amazon, Kindle, Kobe, Comicology, anywhere you want them, Barnes & Noble. You can also see the short, and my email's on there. You can email me and talk to me too.
All right, cool.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for your time.
Wow, wasn't that great?
It was definitely very interesting.
No, but yeah, we can't wait to have him on, and it's going to be very soon, somewhere, I want to say it's going to be like the beginning of November, his episode will be out, and we're looking forward to that. So yeah, and but, you know, the other important thing is the convention is actually about comics.
I've heard of those. That's like TV on paper, right?
What's paper?
It's the stuff they keep shoving in your mailbox.
Yes.
Oh, I thought that was just, that's what you start your fires with in the fireplace. And
they actually apparently put words on those things too.
And sometimes pictures.
Yeah. I've heard of that.
And when they put the pictures and words together, it's a comic book.
Nice.
You know, which is interesting because this is something I wanted to bring up, you know, while we're talking about it. San Diego became a huge media event.
Yes,
more
it
than
has.
It's than it is a comic book convention. And they, you know, and a lot of the conventions are becoming like this now.
Right.
They're putting more emphasis on the TV stars,
right.
The networks. And New York had been pretty good where it hadn't been like that until it got to its 10th anniversary. Where you've got like, and a lot of the creators, you know, again, I did walk around and talk to some people, I only, here and there, and a lot of guys were coming up and talking, you know, Greg obviously has worked for Marvel and DC, so he knows other guys in the business,
yeah.
And they've come up and talked about it. And, you know, you had ABC Family had a booth on the floor.
Yeah.
What is
what do
ABC
they have to promote?
Exactly. They're promoting, you know,
switched at birth?
Right, exactly. Crap like that. It's like, that has nothing to do with comic books.
Right.
Why are they allowed to have a booth?
Maybe they're going to start making a Switch at Birth comic book?
At the convention to promote that
stuff. You know, for the stories in between.
And make an X-Men crossover.
Ford has had a huge display for their Fiesta. Like, they actually brought cars in and stuff. And it's just like, I understand they're giving you a lot of money to do that, but seriously, do we need that at the convention? You're doing that so you can have more money to make the show bigger. And it's just like, bigger isn't always better, you know?
It's a draw on both ends, though. I mean, I agree with you, Dave. I totally do. But I also kind of understand it, because on one hand, they're getting an influx of money because these people are willing to pay, you know, to be a part of these conventions. You know, through the nose, they have money to throw at it. And B, the fact that they're there draws a huge additional number of people, which sells a bunch more tickets to these events.
Right. But those people are up on the floor looking at all that stuff, and they're not going down to where the artists are in Artist Alley and meeting those people. Because it's like, if it wasn't for the artists and the writers down in Artist Alley, none of the other stuff would be going on.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be a convention, you know?
Well, I'm sure that someone could come up with a cable melodrama convention, and that could be a thing. But
it is. They used to have autograph conventions where that's all it was, were celebrities signing autographs.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of combined at this point. Like, one of the cool things they had there, and you know, it was neat to see, but it was kind of like, you can make a weird connection between necessary. They had the Jurassic World doors.
Oh, yeah, the gates.
The gates set up right near the entrance of the convention. Mm-hmm. And then in the front area at one point, they had this life-size animatronic velociraptor. Mm. You know, and it was, people would walk up to it and would like jump at them and stuff.
By that, I assume you mean movie life-size, not actual scientific life-size, which would actually be about the size of a turkey.
yes, you're right. It was movie life size. It was the size that we saw in the movie, not the
small feathered turkey sized velociraptor that was reality.
No, because science sucks. I'm sorry. Fantasy is better. But anyway,
I want to see a feathered velociraptor and think I would love eating that on Thanksgiving.
And then you could use its talon to pick your teeth when you're finished.
Exactly.
How do you know that turkeys aren't descended from
velociraptors? They are. That's my point.
I'm saying you could be eating one every Thanksgiving. You probably are. So, be happy.
As somebody who owns chickens and roosters, I can definitely say that, yes, they can come at you and look quite like velociraptors when they're angry.
they're significantly less threatening, though, clucking and having little beaks and being fat and fluffy and feathery.
Yeah, you haven't had a very irate rooster come after you.
Not recently, no.
And well, actually, and some people that I've talked to said they kind of feel like eventually you're gonna have New York and San Diego are only going to be about movies and television, and then you're just gonna have these smaller cons that are about the comics.
Well, you know what? I say let it be. Let it go that way, because then we can start going to the smaller ones, to the Wizard Worlds, to the what do you call it, the Greater Philadelphia Comic Convention, and those shows where they have the real artists, where they have the real comic. So that's where the fans are going.
Actually, I want to bring this up. This was something that I heard about at Wizard World. I mean, not Wizard World, at New York this year. That was happening at some of the Wizard World shows. And Greg wants to try to spread the word for other artists to hear. So if you're an artist and you're listening to this podcast, listen to this. And he wants to try to get, you know, you guys need to start making noise about this. And this is important. There is actually vendors who are now setting up an Artist Alley. And what they're doing is it's a group that are buying prints from a distributor who goes and essentially just picks a bunch of characters, outsources it to a company in Singapore.
Oh, no.
Where there's like a couple artists who quickly draw up some images, send them over to this company. They make a bunch of prints and they give them to these vendors who are now setting up tables in Artist Alley, selling these prints, claiming that they're artists, but they're not. So,
that's just shitty.
you know, they were actually kicked out of a convention, I think, earlier this year, but like they keep popping up at places. And of course, it's also copyrighted material. You know,
right.
It's Marvel and DC characters that they're doing. And in fact, I don't know if anyone heard, there was this was in the news before the convention. They were talking about a big crackdown on unlicensed artists. This was the group they were going after because there was rumor they were going to try to set up in New York. But no, they didn't. So I guess they stopped them beforehand. And anyone that they really didn't want doing it, we did find out like, Disney called them before the show. Like they didn't even want them coming and setting up, you know?
So you're saying when I bring my art, I should change all the S's to Z's.
Actually, I think you're wrong. They did try and set up. It's just that the Velociraptor ate them.
You thought
those legs were hanging out of it.
Yeah.
That was just for effect.
So, yeah, I mean, it just, you know, it's, you know, I mean, it's funny because, yeah, the artists are there to meet their fans, too. But believe it or not, the cons are a great way for them to supplement their income. Like, there's a lot of artists who only work here and there and they just get maybe a cover here and there to work on. And that's not enough to make, especially if you have a family, you know, to support, you know, everyone. If you get even if you're the cover artist on a book. For an entire year. That's 12 pieces of art you got paid for. That's not a lot of money when you really think about it. You know, they're not getting paid $50,000 a cover. They're not even getting paid, you know, probably $10,000. They're not getting paid $10,000 a cover. So how do you make that kind of money and support a family? You know, so you go to the con, you sell original pieces of work, you do commissions, you know, you sell prints of your work so that you can supplement your income. So when these idiots come in, undersell them, you know, it's taking
with crap too, with unlicensed crap.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's taking money out of their pockets, you know, so it's just something that, you know, any artist, even if you're just a fan artist who's trying to get noticed by going to the conventions, you should be upset by these guys, you know, so.
Well, speaking of the artists, are there any that you know of that we should really be paying attention to right now, Dave?
No, not at all. They're all hacks. No, I mean,
you do want them to come on our show occasionally, right?
Oh yeah. Wait. Was that out loud?
No, you're fine. Let me tell this.
You're saying I have to do this all myself now? Come on. My first act, I rehire both of you.
Right. Oh no, no. Wait, actually,
I heard that.
Did you?
Yes. I got it. Fine. All right.
Not someone that you need to pay a lot of attention to because he's been in the business for a while now. But I actually talked to Dave Jones while I was there. Not Dave Ross. Dave Ross.
You talked to the guy at the bottom of the sea?
You talked to the monkey?
No, neither the monkey nor the pirate.
Yes, I was in a locker. It was, I don't know how to tell you this. It was very odd.
Came out, and that's the important part, Dave, and we support you.
It was one of those, it was funny. It was one of those early mornings on Sunday. It was the last day of the convention, right? And I was walking around, and in all honesty, like at that point, I hadn't interviewed anyone. I kind of walked around on the floor Sunday afternoon, and that's when I talked to Eric. But at this point, I wasn't planning to talk to anyone. I was like, it's been 4 really long days at this point. I'm tired. I'm going to get through today and go home. And Dave Ross's wife says, oh, hi to me. You know, how you doing? She could see I looked tired. She looked tired. We were talking about that. We're just having a nice little conversation. No, you know, nothing earth shattering. Right. And then of course he walks over and he shakes my hand and he starts talking and we're just chit chatting and having a really nice conversation. And I said, you know what? I wasn't planning to interview you, but I'm enjoying our chat. Would you mind if I, you know, record it yet? And I gave him our card and he's like, no, go for it. It's great. And, so yeah, we had a nice little 5-minute chat, you know, 5-10 minute chat. And it's cool. He talked a little bit about, you know, the convention and whatnot, but why do I need to spoil it for you?
Yeah, don't give us everything, Dave. Leave something for the listeners to look forward to. You should hear the shocking things he says about the comic industry.
No. No, we're not going to do that.
Go with it.
He reveals who's gay and who's straight.
It's Dave.
And Superman.
On both counts.
Eventually, we'd like to have him on the show, so maybe we should. And do a full episode. But anyway, yes, everyone, here's my chat with Dave Ross.
Hey, everyone. We're here with Dave Ross. How you doing, sir?
Not too bad. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. So, this is the 10th anniversary of New York Comic Con. What do you think of the show this year?
Show is crazy busy. It's a marvelous show, and there's so much here for everybody to take in. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's definitely grown in the last 10 years from when it started. What do you think about a lot of the conventions around the country are getting bigger and bigger? What do you think about that, and do you think they can be maintained?
Well, of course, they've become more than just comics, and we know that very well by the media coverage, because mm-hmm. there's so many occasions when they'll cover a show like, say, San Diego. I never see them talking to the comic book creators. They're always talking to the actors in the latest TV series and so on. It's all about that end of the media, and it seems to me like, yeah, it's great for the shows to get bigger, but it has to be important that at the core of it should be comics. Comics and the comic creators should never be forgotten in the mix.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's actually something we talk about on the show a lot is comic culture has become pop culture right now. So that's why everything is growing. And I do think eventually it's going to just fizzle back out and hopefully get back to being about the comics, you know. Yeah. So,
well, of course, it takes in such a broad base that I think that won't happen for a long time. That, you know, comics were for a while very, very oriented towards superhero genre. And now you've got the full range of storylines out there. And of course, when you mix it all into the popular media pot, you end up with all kinds of genres out there. Lots of horror these days, lots of fantasy as well. Science fiction, which when I got into the business was big strictly in comics, a no-go. You couldn't mount a science fiction project to save your life. There was a whole thought process amongst editors and publishers during those particular years that comics were only for superheroes and other genres and science fiction was the kiss of death. And of course, we now know that ain't so.
Right. But then again, on the other side, a lot of independents feel that you can't do a superhero comic today because of, you know, popularity of Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and so forth, that trying to create a new superhero that people are going to get behind and like is impossible.
A bit like reinventing the wheel.
Yes, yeah. You feel that's true, or?
I think there's stories out there to tell. I think there's ways of telling stories. I think sometimes we get into a kind of a niche, and when we can look at it through hindsight later on, we realize that a lot of people that we thought were doing really diverse work were actually working very much in the same vein.
Right.
And it's only through being able to step away from it and look back at it. You can look at movements in almost any art field, and you'll see the certain range there. But then you can, later on, you can look back at it and say, oh yeah, just by looking at that work, I can tell it was from the 1960s or from the 1940s. You know, there's certain kind of overall look to it. So I think there's still stories to be told, looks that can be explored in the comic medium. And in the superhero genre, I think there are still definitely some wells to be tapped into.
Cool. That's great to hear. So so you've been doing this for a little while now.
Oh, yes.
Do you, and I know that you teach.
Yes.
What kind of advice do you give to someone starting out in the business?
Well, I think you've got to really have the dedication. You've got to really love it because you're going to be putting in an awful lot of hours doing it.
Right.
You really have to be prepared to sacrifice for it. And more, I think, particularly for the artists, mm-hmm. although I think it goes with anybody that's just working within the genre in a creative way, you have to sort of change your whole outlook. And when you are, say, walking down the street with friends, you just can't switch off your mind in terms of observing everything around you.
Right.
It's all going to be fodder for later. So you really have to just keep that in mind, that you have to be on all the time, and everything is study for you. Study, and of course, lots and lots of practice.
Right.
For the young artists in particular, they have to do a lot of repetition and a lot of practice to get good and get good enough to be in this field.
Cool. And Do you have any projects out right now that you would like people to look out for?
Well, I've been teaching, and beyond the teaching, I have a new book out. It's called Freehand Figure Drawing for Illustrators, and it really is geared for people going into concept art or comic book illustration, storyboarding, all that kind of thing, to be able to do setups of the figure from almost any angle that you can imagine, and any kind of pose that you can think of or need to draw. You need that kind of versatility to be a professional in that business. And I think beyond that, it's just really for anybody who loves drawing and just wants to get back to the basics of you think something up, you imagine something, and you can just, with confidence, sit down and draw it out on paper without the need of having a model in front of you or any kind of other reference, just to be able to do it off the top of your head. Really, it's a wonderful feeling, and it's a feeling that I think should be shared. And everybody should be able to learn this and enjoy it to some degree. So the book is all about teaching the methods, and essentially what I like to say is I've got a new take on an old technique. I've updated the techniques, but I've also looked back to the past and the way this was done with great success by illustrators in past generations. So it's a book that was based on a lot of feedback from students. It's very comprehensive. And it's something that the students have told me was needed in the marketplace, that they just couldn't find anything like in the bookstores. So it's out there now, and I'm hoping people can get a hold of it and enjoy it and learn out of it.
Wow, it's great when a student comes back and tells you something like that. Yeah. So where can people find it?
The book is sold in all major stores. It's a Random House book. It's under the Watson Guptill imprint, but it's Random House, so it's very widely distributed. Okay. You'll certainly be able to find it in any of the major bookstores. You can also get it on Amazon.
All right. And where can people... Are you online and can people find you?
I'm online.
Are you on Twitter?
I'm not on any of that yet. I do have a website.
All right.
So you can go and check out my website at www.daverossart.com.
All right.
It's just that simple.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
That was...
Who knew he worked on so many titles? Fun. I mean, it's amazing.
I just don't understand why he did the whole thing in Japanese.
We actually didn't... We didn't talk about the titles.
I'm just looking at his About Me page right now.
Yes. But yes, he's worked on... he's worked for Marvel, DC, like everyone. He's worked on the Avengers, Spider-Man, Batman, Alien versus Predator. Yeah. Amazing artist, you know, and just a really nice guy. He's also a teacher too. And,
I see that.
So don't forget to check out his website, daverossart.com. And if you're an artist, pick up his new book that he mentioned, Freehand Figure Drawing for Illustrators.
Nice. I should get that for my dog.
Yeah. Exactly. There you go. Get it on Amazon, $20, and she'll learn how
you're
to draw.
I finish my Christmas shopping right here, right now.
Exactly. And I hope everyone else.
And you can have it too for 6 easy payments of some amount of money that I did not have lined up right there.
Okay, well, what's 20 divided by 6?
You're asking me to do math now? Let's say 350.
Okay. So 6 easy payments of 350.
Ish.
Plus shipping and handling.
Right.
Yes. We're trying to get people to buy the book.
I just like making you break, Dave.
Yes, you do. So we're all looking forward to Super
Bowl. We are, mostly.
Mostly. Yes. Okay, wait. I did cut you off. You did not like the Red Tornado.
The previews they showed of Tornado and Red Tornado in costume, they're not doing it for me. They're just, it looks cheesy. It looks like something that would fit into the 90s version of The Flash. And that bugs me.
Right, but do we know if they're going to do something with CGI on top of that in the final product?
We don't, but I don't know. I think that I just feel like there could have been, like, it seems like they're having this actor play both the T.O. Morrow part as well as the android part, and I'm okay with that, but I would have preferred to see, like, an evolution of the android side. Like, don't jump to the, you know, DC answers to the Vision. Start with the more... you know, simple robotic version of the android, similar to what we saw in the Young Justice cartoon, you know, with the Iron Man face kind of thing going on, rather than jumping straight to, you know, humanoid features. That would have been my preference.
Yeah, but you can make the same argument about how they did the Vision in Age of
no,
Ultron.
No, I disagree, because they built a strong story around how the Vision was created. It wasn't just an android that Ultron created and built. It was a hybrid that he, you know, had the intelligence to engineer that leveraged both vibranium and human, you know, DNA to create this vessel that he was going to inhabit. So he's semi-organic. So it made sense for him to look human because he is at least half human. He's just modified human.
True, but, you know, they skipped over the whole Wonder Man part. I mean, how can you have Vision without Wonder Man?
Yeah, I wondered that, and I even a Marvel guy for crying out loud.
I'm okay without Wonder Man for now. I think.
and how do you have Vision and Scarlet Witch have a relationship without Wonder Man?
I don't think they have to. Just because they did it in the comics doesn't mean it has to translate to the big screen.
But they hinted at it in the movie.
Well, you know, as long as they keep his batteries fresh, I guess she can have a relationship.
Wasn't that a joke they made in Next Generation with Data?
Yeah, I remember that one too.
Wow, guys, we're really depressing here at this point.
We also got quite length to this episode. Yeah. No pun intended.
Oh.
If it gets any longer, it's going to get caught on the door.
If it gets any longer, it's going to become X-rated. I think we're all tired and ready to go to bed. Not together.
Sling it over the shoulder like a cape.
So, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't turned us off yet, as always, don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week.